You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Well, welcome everybody to tonight's live broadcast of TPC. I'm your host, James Edwards. This Saturday evening, March the 16th, and we've packed our bags for Ireland as our march around the world rolls on. Yeah, we're halfway through
it. St. Patrick's Day.
That is a total coincidence. I was actually, Keith, it's funny you mentioned that. It just occurred to me as the opening music was playing that it is, in fact, St. Patrick's Day as we catch up on the Emerald Isle with...
A lot of people in downtown Memphis are getting drunk and drinking green beer.
Now, we respect it for more venerable reasons, but we are on the Emerald Isle tonight with Irish nationalist Keith Woods. He is back on the show, his first appearance in March around the world, and it just so happens to be St. Patrick's Day weekend. So how about that? One of the 200 most influential Twitter users in the world, he was recently called. He became a global phenomenon last year during his ongoing discourse with Elon Musk, and we welcome him back now. Keith, happy St. Patrick's Day. Great to have you.
Hey, I appreciate it. It's good to be back. Always enjoy speaking to you.
Always enjoy it as well, my friend. So let's get right down into it. I know we have limited time with you this evening. So, yeah, let's just catch up where we left off. We last talked to you, let me check my notes here, on September the 30th of last year. You were making global, worldwide news from your interactions with Elon Musk and his constant engagement of you and the Ban the ADL hashtag. Jonathan Greenblatt was going on all the TV shows to specifically refute you or attempt to refute you. He was definitely on there to talk about you. What's happened since last September?
Yeah, you know, that was a very interesting time, and it's been interesting since. I mean, that was a real kind of window of free speech there in that period. And I think since then, I think they have shut it down to an extent. It's still better than it was under Jack Dorsey and the old leadership. But I think there was a kind of compromise that Musk came to, specifically with the ADL. And Greenblatt even said this in an interview when the whole Israel conflict kicked off, that they had come to some kind of an agreement. I think what they sort of agreed on was that Elon would do more to kind of tackle the anti-Zionism on the platform. You know, he banned the phrase "from the river to the sea" that Palestinian advocates were using. And I think that was kind of the under-the-table agreement, as Elon would do more to crack down on this anti-Israel, sort of anti-colonialist stuff. And some of these Zionist Jewish groups would let off a little bit in terms of the pressure on advertisers. And then, you know, he was very close with Ben Shapiro since then. He did this very high-profile trip to Auschwitz. He did an interview for Ben Shapiro's Daily Wire. So it's kind of interesting. I wouldn't read his mind, but it does seem like he realized, with all the controversy around, you know, Ban the ADL and the advertiser boycotts, it seems like he realized that the way forward for him was to kind of align himself with a section of, the Jewish community as a kind of protection.
It is interesting because, as you said, yes, he did the tour of Auschwitz. With his son, and he has done these things. He did this interview. I believe it was the aforementioned interview with Ben Shapiro, where he said he is aspirationally Jewish. If, you know, if he could just reach that level of being, he would. But at the same time, is that where he draws the line? Because there's just no doubt about it. I mean, it's a mixed bag, but I think even though I have been banned in the Elon Musk era, along with Kevin McDonald and some of our other friends, and I'm not saying that Elon Musk is the one going in there and personally doing these bans. He might not know. He might not have ever heard of me. Who knows? But the thing is he drawing the line here on the Jewish question? Because simultaneously, as he has done those things that you just mentioned, he has recently, and I mean very recently, tweeted about black-on-white crime, IQ differences, and even more recently than that, I think just last week, the SPLC being a total sham and raising awareness of the free speech situation involving Dries Van Langenhove, which we'll mention in just a moment. So how do you reconcile all of that, Keith?
Yeah, you know, I think Elon if you look at his feed, I mean, it's almost like the Twitter account of an alt-right user 7 or 8 years ago, you know?
Yeah.
He's tweeting all day about illegal immigration and about anti-white bias in the media. He tweeted out a graph about that the other day, about how black perpetrators' race is not mentioned in articles around crime, these kinds of things. So, yeah, that seems to be where he is now, in terms of he's opposed to the diversity, the DEI policies, he's opposed to illegal immigration, he's opposed to the kind of anti-white animus in our culture. But, yeah, he draws the line on discussion of Jewish power, which, look, it's still a big improvement. And, you know, a lot of people that talk about that issue are still on there. But, yes, many are banned. And this is the thing about a big company like Twitter. It's a world of its own. I mean, I'll tell you a good example, because you mentioned Sam Melia. Elon Musk was responding to a lot of these posts about Sam Melia, saying, wow, this is terrible. You know, his kind of double exclamation mark reply. Is this real? Like a guy going to jail for sharing stickers saying it's okay to be white? Now, Sam Melia is banned off Twitter. So is his wife, Laura Towler. So are all the patriotic alternative accounts. I don't think Elon Musk is even aware of that. I'm sure it was just some decree handed by the British government to some employees and the British version of Twitter, and they're gone. You know, he was responding. He replied personally to Dries Van Langenhove, who we met at Amran.
That's right.
Asking him. Yeah, and he was asking him, is this real? Are you really going to be sent to jail for, you know, being in a group chat where memes were shared? This sounds crazy. But even Dries's account is kind of throttled. You know, he has some kind of shadow ban where if he posts images, you can't view them, this kind of thing. So there's all sorts of, I think it just shows the nature of this thing where, you know, Elon is interacting with these people and he's like, wow, this is terrible. These people are being censored. Meanwhile, his own organization is also censoring them, and he just seems kind of oblivious to it.
Well, Keith, this is Keith Alexander. Let me just say this. Apparently, Jonathan Greenblatt and the ADL are very frustrated. They thought they had all the leaks sealed by getting Elon Musk not to, you know, allow anti-Semitic content.
So-called anti-Semitic, of course.
Yeah, so-called anti-Semitic content. And then another hole, you know, pops open with TikTok. That's where everything apparently now is coming in. Greenblatt's about, I'd say pull out his hair, but I think he's already done that. But,
if you want to, Keith, very quickly, comment on what's going on with TikTok. I think if I'm reading the tea leaves correctly, the Occupied Congress here in America is going after TikTok, at least seemingly so, because there is objective criticism on Israel there that's a little more unfiltered than it is on Twitter. If you could just comment on what's going on with TikTok, I do want to go back and do a little bit deeper dive on the Sam Melia and Dries Van Langenhove incidents over there in Europe.
Yeah, well, on TikTok, I mean, what we were talking about earlier, where Greenblatt made this kind of deal with Musk, there was a lot of criticism of Greenblatt from within the Jewish community during banning the ADL, because a lot of right-wing or Zionist Jews were saying, look, the ADL is there to protect Zionist interests, and it's become this very partisan left-wing organization. It's not helping that cause. And the real problem is that you have all these young leftists that are super anti-Israel from this anti-colonial perspective, and you know that's where the focus should be instead of banning Trump supporters. And then, you know, along comes October 7th, along comes the flaring up of this conflict again. And yeah, the focus certainly shifted, because there was a huge growth of pro-Palestinian content on TikTok. And the ADL actually put out a report in early November where they talked about this. And they were very frustrated because they said, look, we have ins at all of these social media companies. I mean, Greenblatt brags about it, that they have employees working inside Google, inside Meta, that get to study the algorithms. But he was very frustrated, saying, look, we can't do the same thing with TikTok. We can't study the way people are kind of entering these pipelines where they're discovering this anti-Zionist content. And, you know, TikTok is the platform of the youth. Greenblatt has been talking about his frustrations about this, that the youth are very anti-Israel. And, you know, they have promoted these anti-colonial, sort of anti-white narratives. But those narratives have kind of come back around and they are used on Israel now. So TikTok definitely became a big problem for them. And these were the arguments that were made. I mean, this was proposed under Trump, but then it kind of went away. But if you look at when this really comes back on the agenda, you'll find a lot of articles from October, November, where it is these people. You know, there was a specific Jewish influencer on Twitter that sort of analyzed this and made the same kind of argument that, with TikTok, with this kind of algorithm that couldn't be manipulated by Silicon Valley, it was allowing the growth of this pro-Palestinian content, and it dominated on that platform more than anything. So that was, I think, a huge factor in bringing this back on the table. You know, you had some of these people. Senator Marsha Blackburn was one of the first people to propose this. And she specifically said in October that one of the main reasons for this is she believed the Chinese was promoting pro-Palestinian, pro-Hamas propaganda on TikTok. So that was kind of there from the start and bringing this back on the agenda.
Well, it's part of a bigger problem that they've had ever since the development of the Internet. Basically, the Internet can't be controlled like the old media used to be. Like the New York Times, you know, that would be a small to medium-sized influencer on Facebook or something today. You know, there are so many other sources of information than the – you know, they had everything tied up neatly with a bow when you had ABC, CBS, NBC, PBS, and, you know, New York Times, Washington Post. But now they can't deal – you know, they're trying to play zone defense, and they can't do it anymore.
Well, that's a great point, Keith, and that is that, yes, I mean, prior to the age of the Internet, Keith, in Ireland, of course, we were reduced to putting flyers on windshields, you know, underneath windshield wipers. That was the way a dissident got out the message. That's the only way you could do it. You're completely locked out, and now you have content creators on social media that are reaching more people. I think Tucker Carlson's objectively reaching more people now than he was as the top-rated cable news host. So it is a big problem for him, and that is why I think, and this is a perfect segue back into something I sure wanted to get your opinion on. You're right there in the middle of all of this, in between, you know, right next to the UK and not too far from Belgium, where the battle line right now is freedom of speech, and they are coming down hard. We were talking with in the last 2 weeks, censorship. But, you know, you're talking about hard prison sentences now, not just, you know, you're going to be kicked out of polite society, maybe you're going to be fined. But we were talking with Paul Fromm and Remy Tremblay in the last 2 weeks, respectively, what they're trying to do in Canada with the so-called Online Harms Act. And then, of course, here in the United States with Thomas Rousseau and the J6 people and the people in Charlottesville 7 years after the fact now going to prison and being arrested and all of that. I mean, the message is certainly to stay off the streets and shut up. But I think two of the most egregious cases, perhaps the two most egregious cases, are cases that we've already mentioned. Sam Melia in the UK and Dries Van Langenhove in Belgium. Let's start with Sam. Now, we have a friend here who's an attorney who actually flew over to the UK and was set in for his trial, wrote a great article about it for the American Free Press newspaper. I believe it's in the current edition. But to break it down for us as succinctly as you can, Keith, the situation with Sam Melia. You mentioned he put up stickers saying it's okay to be white. Newly married, young kid, and he's going to prison.
Yeah, I mean, this is a case where even people that typically would ignore cases like this because he's a nationalist, you know, because he's termed a racist, even these people were chiming in and said, wow, this is extremely concerning. You know, these people like Tommy Robinson, like Sargon of Akkad, all these people were commenting on this. And the more you look at the details of the case, it's just astonishing that this is happening in a Western country. I mean, Sam did not even post these stickers himself. I mean, essentially, he uploaded images that people could download as stickers and share around. But yes, you know, there were hundreds of them. It was stuff like, it's okay to be white, you know, demographics is destiny, love your nation, stop anti-white grooming gangs.
Very positive messages being called hate. I mean, this is Orwellian, textbook Orwellian. Yeah.
And when you read what the judge said, I mean, that's when this really gets dystopian and you realize, like, the kind of tyranny these laws allow, these speech laws, because the judge told the jury that it didn't matter if the statements were true or not. The jury was not to take account of that. That was irrelevant. And also, it didn't matter if the individual statements on the stickers broke the law. So what the only thing that mattered, according to the judge, was Sam's intent. And so basically the jury had to rule on, did he intend to stir up, quote, hate? So, I mean, when that's the burden of proof, when it doesn't even matter if what you're saying is true and correct, when the statements themselves are fine, that's just incredible. And yes, 2 years in prison. I mean, the same judge has given suspended sentences to convicted pedophiles and allowed them to walk foreign pedophiles
that's key.
In the UK.
I gotta pause you right there, my friend, just to emphasize that point. 2 years, this young man, law-abiding citizen, married with a young child, 2 years in prison for it's okay to be white stickers. Pedophiles get a suspended sentence. They get to go. Yep.
Yeah, it's incredible. And Laura Taylor, his wife, is actually, I believe, 8 months pregnant. So he will miss the birth of his second child. You know, he'll be in prison for 2 years. He'll miss a lot of those significant early moments of his second child's development. So, you know, he's such a nice guy. It really humanizes this whole thing. And you have Dries. I mean, you mightn't have even seen this before we came on a couple of hours ago. It's been going around Twitter. Martin Sellner, who a couple of weeks ago, I believe he was banned from Germany. Well, tonight, the police shut down a speech he gave in Switzerland. The video footage is quite something. They cut the power on a speech he was given about a book he has where he discusses remigration. And they come in and handcuff him and walk him out off the stage. So it is a new level of tyranny. I don't think we've seen anything like this. I mean, these laws have been there. There's been individual cases. But as far as extending this now to people like Sam, to people like Dries, who was an elected member of parliament, and
yes,
you know, he's not officially a member of a party, but the kind of broader political group he's associated with is actually polling top in Belgium right now. So it's not just like they're targeting, you know, very obscure people that have these obscure ideologies on the internet. They're targeting members of parliament. They're targeting people that have, you know, according to polls, the most popular beliefs in their country. And they're just locking them up and saying you can't partake in politics. I mean, part of Dries van Langenhove's sentence, and for those that don't know, what he is charged with is he was in a group chat where other people posted offensive memes and images. And the judge ruled that he did not do enough to stop these being posted. Part of it is a jail sentence, but part of it is that he will have 10 years of suspended civil liberties where he's not allowed to participate in politics.
That's it. Let me just emphasize this again very quickly. So here's Dries van Langenhove, who, if anybody was with Keith and I, we were all three there at Amren last year. Keith and I both spoke. Dries brought the house down. He was the keynote speaker. And interestingly, Philip DeWinter emailed me just a few days ago, and we have an interview up on our website right now, thepoliticalcesspool.org, a Q&A with Philip DeWinter. We didn't mention the Dries thing because he emailed me before I found out about all of this, so I didn't know to ask. But in any event, this is a sharp guy, good guy, former member of parliament, as you mentioned, head squarely on his shoulder, screwed in right, and because he was in a group chat, I haven't seen what was allegedly offensive. I doubt it was anything that would upset any of us. But nevertheless, because he didn't reprimand the person who sent it, he goes to jail for a year and then cannot participate in the political process for the next decade. This is a guy who could have really risen up the ranks, already having been a member of parliament. Who knows how far he could have gone, especially as things are beginning to coalesce behind our ideas. And that is why I think, again, they're coming down so hard and making an example. They are certainly want to instill a sense of fear. And again, the message is, do not participate, do not speak, do not get in the streets, do not run for office, or this could happen to you. Keith, Alexander.
And of course, this goes further because you can't even access the internet and get into a chat room without dire consequences. Excuse me. Is this something new? Is this a bit major offensive by the other side, or is this just a coincidence that these two guys happen to run afoul of, unrelated groups or something, or is this part of a bigger clampdown that the powers that be in Europe are planning?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean, these laws have been on the books, especially in the UK. They've been on the books for a long time. But I think what's new is how aggressively they're going after specific dissidents now. You know, it's no coincidence that these people are very successful. And just recently, I mean, just the other day, Michael Gove in the UK Parliament, who's a member of the Conservative government, named Patriotic Alternative specifically as extremist groups they would be targeting. And they have this new sort of extremely broad version of what they call extremism, which basically says if you don't believe in liberal pluralism, multiculturalism, you're an extremist. I mean, that's essentially what the definition says. It's, you know, people that, promote bigotry, all this kind of very vague stuff. intolerances in there. But it essentially means they can ban their opposition. And Gove specifically named Patriotic Alternative, which has thousands of members. You know, it's totally peaceful. All they advocate for is peaceful political change. But the same conversation is happening in Germany. You know, there's been talk at the highest levels about banning AfD, which is currently polling as the most popular party in Germany. I also saw just today, you know, they're actually changing elements of how the government works so that when AfD is in government at any level, that they can't access the same intelligence briefings as other parties. You know, they're bringing in all these rules specifically so AfD will not be able to engage in politics the same way as other political parties. AfD has 24,000 members. Apparently, according to news release, that 10,000 of those are on a list considered extremists by the German government. So, I mean, it's a mark, perhaps, of the rise in populism and the rise in nationalism that they are being targeted so aggressively. Because, like I said, AfD is polling top in Germany. If they were polling 10th, there probably wouldn't be, you know, they wouldn't be making changes in how the German government functions to block out AfD. Belgium has a history of this. I mean, in the early 2000s, they banned a popular nationalist political party called Vlaams Blok. They just banned it outright on the basis that they said its literature was extreme. So we see this all the time in Western Europe. You can get to a certain level, the illusion of a fair democracy is there, but as soon as you start knocking on the door of power, as soon as you start becoming a serious threat to the establishment, that's when you feel the force of the state come down and you see where the priorities of the state really lie.
Well, Keith,
fantastic commentary, I must say. Go, right. Keith.
Any bright ideas about how we can counter this effectively? You know, or are we just going to be a pincushion?
Yeah, I mean, it's very difficult. And, you know, you look at the UK, and to me, the UK is you know, that's the situation you have to avoid because they just have it so locked down in terms of the police state that they have. I mean, there was over 3,000 arrests for words posted online in the UK last year. Just an insane number. And of course, you know, Ireland is bringing true hate speech laws now. But there has actually been quite a pushback against this. And, you know, maybe like James was talking about earlier, the rise of the internet, that definitely organized a lot of this, where there was kind of an organic pushback. There was a big pressure campaign on these politicians over the hate speech law. Many government politicians are dissenting about this. But look, I mean, What's going to happen when a party like AfD or when a party like Dries's party in Belgium are at the point where they are actually the most popular parties in their countries, they're capable of taking power? Well, you know, at a certain point, the regime has to choose between power and legitimacy. And, you know, it's been able to get away with this. It's been able to get away with the targeting of dissidents. I think as time goes on, I think you're seeing more and more conservatives start to realize that they're included in this as well. And like I said with Sam, a lot of people spoke out about that would have ignored it a few years ago. And so I think that's all we can do is try and build that united front. And you know, if the government is going to have to choose between power and legitimacy, let them choose power, let them lose all their legitimacy with as many people as possible. And, you know, the way we do that is by advocating for these people, by you know, educating conservatives, bringing them over, showing them that they are under this oppression as well. It will come for them. Thankfully, I know James has talked about this a lot, but I think more and more of them are waking up to that.
Well, what type of reaction is this provoking among right-wing people and among the population generally? Is it one of these things when all is said and done, more will be said than done? Or is it something that is provoking a legitimate reaction that is, you know, going to provide some type of threat to the powers that be?
Yeah, I mean, I guess they have a conundrum in a sense that, you know, with the AfD, I mean, when they target the AfD and they talk about outright banning it, I'm sure that does help them with a lot of people, the fact that clearly, you know, clearly nationalism is a threat to the regime if they will go this far to keep them out of power. In the case of these cases like Sam Melia, like Dries, a lot of times the commentary comes a bit too late. You know, the popular conservatives will mention this after he's already in jail and the key is thrown away.
Hold on right there. We are with the one and only Keith Woods, commentator par excellence, one of the 200 most influential X users in the world, and you know why. We got him for one more segment, the St. Patrick's Day weekend. Stay tuned.
pursuing liberty, using the Constitution as our guide. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA News, I'm Dave Collins. Prosecutor Nathan Wade is resigning from Donald Trump election interference case in Georgia. In a written statement, Wade says he's doing it in the interest of democracy and to move the case forward as quickly as possible. A Georgia judge ruled that Fulton County DA Fawny Willis can remain on former President Trump's election interference case if Wade was removed. The judge overseeing former President Trump's hush money trial in New York is agreeing to delay it. The trial was scheduled to start on March 25th. It will now be pushed back until the middle of April. Trump is accused of covering up hush money payments to an adult film star, Stormy Daniels, before the 2016 election. The governor of Ohio says people in his state came together in the aftermath of some devastating storms.
I asked some of the law enforcement, you know, how in the world did you check all the places? And they got it done. But we also had neighbors who were watching out for neighbors.
Republican Mike DeWine toured some of the damage in the north central part of the state. Officials said three people died in one tornado. Heavy damage was reported in different areas of Ohio after five tornadoes were confirmed in the state. Criminal charges won't be filed against the shooter in Thursday's violent incident on a Brooklyn subway train. The Brooklyn DA's office says this is due to evidence of self-defense. Police say a 32-year-old man was on a Manhattan-bound A train when a 36-year-old started a fight with him and pulled out a gun. NFL star defensive lineman Aaron Donald is retiring. He made the announcement on social media, thanking the Los Angeles Rams and fans for supporting him the last 10 years. Donald is considered by many to be one of the greatest defensive players in NFL history. This is USA News.
Hey, here's a question. After you wear your clothes, you toss them in the washing machine, right? Nobody wants to wear dirty clothes. So how do we don't throw your shoes in the washing machine when they get dirty? I mean, come on. Your shoes are touching the filthy ground all day long. Gross. Well, with Skechers, you can. Because most Skechers are machine washable. That's right. Skechers are specially made so you can toss them right in the washing machine and keep them clean and looking new. And when they look new, you can confidently wear them longer. That's less shoes you're going to want to throw away, which means less waste. And it'll save you tons of dough. I love that. Plus, machine washable Skechers are for the whole family, men, women, and kids. So when your kids get their shoes dirty, oh, and we know they will, just wash them. Brilliant. And even our latest technology, new hands-free Skechers slip-ins are washable. You just step right in and go without bending down or even touching your shoes. So give your Skechers the same treatment you give your clothes. Just toss them in the washing machine and keep them looking brand spanking new. Find machine washable Skechers at a Skechers store, Skechers.com, or wherever stylish footwear happens to be sold.
The Honorable Cause of Free South is a collection of 12 essays written by Southern nationalist authors. The book explores topics such as what is the Southern nation, what is Southern nationalism, and how can we achieve a free and independent Dixie. The Honorable Cause answers questions on our own terms. The book invites readers to understand for themselves why a free and independent Dixie is both preferable and possible. The book pulls in some of the biggest producers of pro-South content, including James Edwards, the host and creator of The Political Cesspool, and Wilson Smith, author of Charlottesville Untold, Arkansas congressional candidate and activist Neil Kumar, host and creator of the Dissident Mama podcast, Rebecca Dillingham, author of A Walk in the Park, My Charlottesville Story, Identity Dixie's Patrick Martin, and yours truly, Michael Hill, founder and president of the League of the South, as well as several other authors. The Honorable Cause is available now at Amazon.com.
Hey friends, James Edwards here again to remind you that Antelope Hill Publishing is America's premier provider of dissident literature. They print books that mainstream publishers are too afraid to touch, providing you with information you need to challenge the status quo. Whether your interests include contemporary dissident politics, history that would otherwise be censored or slandered, philosophy, or exciting and thought-provoking fiction, You'll find plenty to love in the Antelope Hill catalog, which includes books such as Generation 68, The Elite Revolution and Its Legacy, about the elite-driven cultural revolution of the 1960s, which transformed America. Whitey on the Moon, about the demise of the space program due to diversity. The Sword of Christ, which argues for restoring Christianity as the foundation of the West and combating heresies like Christian Zionism. Speeches by Mussolini and other historical figures, and much more. With new titles added every month, there's no doubt that they have something for everyone. So check out their catalog today at AntelopeHillPublishing.com. And we're back for one more segment in Ireland live tonight with Keith Woods. And I want to thank Keith again. I think I did back in September, but want to be sure to mention it. Keith appealed directly to Elon Musk during the height of all of that to reinstate the account of yours truly and Kevin MacDonald and others. And I appreciate that, and Hope Springs and all of that. But
at least you're not in jail.
It's Friday. That's right. Well, and we did have a good talk with Keith about what's going on over there, and with regards to free speech. And I do believe this. I do believe that there is a growing momentum behind our people, behind our side. And I believe it is because of that growing momentum that the regime is coming down with even more heavy-handed tactics. I do believe we're going to turn it around. I do believe we're going to win. How is that going to happen? Well, as St. Paul wrote in 1 Corinthians, for now we see through a glass darkly. I can't tell you, but we are going to continue this fight.
It'll take divine intervention, I believe.
Well, no, things change. You know, they don't always stay the same. We talked about this at AMRN. USSR. I mean, you know, things happen, and they're going to happen for us. But
during my lifetime, we've certainly taken a change for the worse when it comes to the First Amendment.
Here, but in Eastern Europe, you know, not so much. But the exact opposite, in fact. Keith, you are representing Ireland during this, our march around the world, and with the time we have remaining, I want to shift gears now to the situation there on the Emerald Isle. You spoke at AMRN last year, as we have mentioned, an island for everyone. Ireland is at a crossroads, you said back last fall. So let's talk about it. What is the state of affairs for our people in Ireland?
Right. Well, there was a brief respite from endless victories for the liberal agenda here recently, because they actually did a referendum here. And they've done these referenda the last few years. You know, they've been very high profile. They love doing this. You know, Ireland voted on gay marriage. Ireland voted for abortion. And they hammer through one plank after another. This time it was about, you know, the outdated language in the Irish Constitution that it said, you know, a woman is entitled to raise a family in the home, and she should not have to be forced by economic necessity out of the home. It gave special place for the institution of marriage as the foundation of the family. And so, of course, the government wanted to remove that. It wanted to replace family marriage with durable relationships, was the term being used, and take out the mention of women or mothers specifically. And everyone thought this was going to pass comfortably. You know, every establishment political party supported it, all of the mainstream media. I mean, I certainly thought it would pass, honestly. There was barely a voice against it unless you went on Twitter or Telegram or something, right? But it was overwhelmingly voted down. It was over 70% rejected.
There you go.
Every constituency in Ireland except one in South Dublin, which has kind of always been the most liberal area, rejected it. So that was a comprehensive defeat for the government. And I'm not sure specifically what the motives were in terms of people's feelings about the constitution, but I just read it as a populist kind of rejection of the government, and generally of a feeling that they're going too far on, I guess, what people would call the woke agenda, maybe. But it does show there is sentiment out there. There is populist sentiment building. And, you know, I'm hoping that can turn into something positive here, because I think there's been signs of it the last few years here in Ireland. You know, there is under the surface. There's been a lot of organic, you know, community movements against immigration, against asylum seekers being brought into their area. I was in a protest in Dublin on St. Bridget's Day here. I think there was probably 4,000 or 5,000 people there from all over the country. So it's been building for a while, and, you know, I'm just hoping we'll start to see electoral success soon.
What's the percentage of native-born old stock Irish versus these new immigrants now?
Good question.
Is immigration beginning to swamp you in effect of, you know, the governance of your country?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I believe it's about 80% native. But, you know, it's sometimes these figures aren't totally accurate, maybe even less. So that is actually, you know, that's quite bad. That's almost UK levels. The UK always seems a lot worse because, you know, they have second, third generation immigrants. It's so embedded in their society. Here, it's very much more recent arrivals. And last year was
the highest
ever.
Sounds like heaven to us. We've got twice. You've got 20%. We've got
40%. Well, yeah. Yeah, so I mean, in simple numbers, you know, and last year was the highest ever number of immigrants brought in a year. It was, you know, about 3% of the population in immigrants in a single year. So it has become a crisis. But again, if you look at Poland, I mean, now with Irish people, it's the top policy that they're concerned about. And that even applies to like Sinn Féin voters who are left wing. So it's kind of across the political spectrum now. People are starting to really oppose this.
I've got three questions for you, Keith, before we run out of time. And let's see, as we said here now, we got about 5 minutes left, so we'll have to make haste. I know you advocate for self-determination for our people. Obviously, that has to begin at home. What is love if not loving your own people more than your neighbor? I mean, that's mm-hmm. just it. That's just natural and healthy. Are the people of Europe, the rank-and-file citizens of the respective nations that make up the mother continent, are they the ones clamoring for rampant, unchecked immigration from Africa?
And Mideast.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't want to bring nothing but black pills here today, but you know, another thing that happened today is a black man was appointed the First Minister of Wales, which means now Wales has a black First Minister. Scotland has Hamza Yousaf, a Pakistani First Minister. The UK's Prime Minister is Rishi Sunak, who's Indian. Ireland's Prime Minister, Leo Varadkar, is half Indian. And the mayor of London, Sadiq Khan, is I believe, Indian, or he may be Pakistani as well, actually. So that's a clean sweep, you know.
We need to find the white Gandhi to fight these Indians.
Yeah, I mean, it's incredible. You know, I posted about this on Twitter, and you know, you see some of these leftists celebrating it in the replies, and they have, like, decolonization in their bio. Well, they certainly support colonization in one direction, right, when you
yeah,
have
that's
every
right. that's
country
exactly right.
in the British Isles led by a Pakistani or an Indian. As far as popular support, I mean, certainly from Poland, generally, there is a majority against mass immigration in all these countries. I mean, the Conservative Party in the UK is on course to be completely wiped out. I mean, the polling for the next election has shown it may end up with seats in the single digits, which would be absolutely historical. And that's a case of voters for a long time, their main concern was immigration. They showed it with Brexit, with the elections around Brexit subsequently. And just year after year, decade after decade of betrayal. Same thing in many other countries. I mean, this is the whole problem, you know. You even see what Meloni in Italy now has walked back a lot of the things she ran on in terms of immigration. So it's just been a story of constant betrayal from these sort of center-right conservative parties. And I think at this point, you know, until those parties are just completely wiped out, removed from power, and there's just a totally new political movement on the right that is, you know, demographics, immigration first in terms of its focus, I think that's the only way we're going to see any kind of change. And I do think, look, if you look at the Poland, I mean, it's kind of interesting. The one trend you see across Europe is the younger you get, the more left-wing people vote. But the people that are on the right, and in some countries, maybe it's only 25% instead of maybe it used to be 50-50, but they don't support the conservative parties at all. They always go for the more right-wing parties. Like, if you look at Poland, right, they have this peace party, which is their sort of conservative party, most popular party among the majority, among older people. You get into people in their 20s, the most popular political party of any party is Konfederacja, which is, you know, very explicitly ethno-nationalist Polish party. And that's sort of the trend across Europe. So I think the only hope is that, you know, these sort of dinosaur political parties in Europe, these post-war conservative parties, are going to die a death just due to demographics. And hopefully their voters can be moved over into supporting explicitly nationalist political parties.
You're right about that. And I had a conversation about this, I believe it was last year, with a guest who said, you know, Meloni was fool's gold. And But the key is, I think, people thought they were voting right. And that's the thing. We can build off of that. We can build off of that, and we will build off of that. One last question. I got to get this in. Keith, and then Keith, you and I will continue this conversation in the next segment, follow up and afterthoughts. But which region of Europe generally, Keith, and which nation specifically? You're talking about, well, we setbacks here in Western Europe, the clean sweep there of the Isles. Which region of Europe generally and which nation specifically could we invest our greatest hope in?
Well, you know, it does tend to be the peripheries. I mean, from what I see, Portugal actually has a very strong nationalist movement. I think Ireland, I think there has been the growth of a really significant populist movement under the surface. The question will be in the next few years is how will that translate in terms of mass politics, in terms of elections, in terms of building a proper political vehicle. I think, look, Eastern Europe is definitely more averse to some of the pause as some Western European countries. I've been to the Balkans. I've traveled there a bit. You know, they I think, certainly understand what's going on and are not going to go the same course as the rest of Europe. I was in Hungary last year. I was very impressed with what I saw in terms of the nationalist politics there. So it is the peripheries right now. Western Europe is in a very, very dark state. But I'm hoping a lot of countries will see what's happened there and learn from those mistakes.
Ladies and gentlemen, go to our website, thepoliticalcesspool.org. You click on the link promoting tonight's show, and you'll link over to Keith's Twitter.
Hey there, TPC family. This is James Edwards, your host of The Political Cesspool. Folks, I want you to subscribe to the American Free Press, America's last real newspaper. Against all odds, AFP has and continues to publish a populist, independent print newspaper with an unparalleled track record. Founded by a dedicated group of experienced patriots, AFP pulls no punches and tackles the most controversial and pressing issues facing America from an America First perspective. I've worked with the American Free Press since even before the beginning of TPC. Now that's something. You can subscribe to the print edition by visiting AmericanFreePress.net today or simply pick up a handy digital edition subscription. However you do it, subscribe to the American Free Press, America's last real newspaper, by visiting AmericanFreePress.net or by calling 1-888-699-NEWS, AmericanFreePress.net.
This is a battle. A battle between truth and deceit. A battle between forces that would enslave this country in darkness and between a media that wants to present you with the truth.
We are being censored. America's news outlets no longer provide the truth. 90% of news outlets in the United States are controlled by 6 corporations. The mission of the Epoch Times is to chase the truth, to ground all statements in fact.
TheEpicTimes.com.
Looking for an IT partner that truly understands your needs? Managed IT Services is the answer. We meet with you regularly to discuss your goals and form a tailored technology plan. Our customers have called us a trusted advisor who delivers. When it comes to IT, we do it all. Firewalls, cloud storage, server migration, and more. Say goodbye to long-term contracts and hello to a team that earns your business month after month. Call 801-706-6980 now and let Managed IT Services transform your IT experience.
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, do we get the very best on the program, or do we get the very best on the program? That's Keith Woods from Ireland. And think about the sacrifice he made tonight, Keith Alexander, as he walks back in from the green room. An Irishman coming on near midnight on Saturday night, his time, St. Patrick's Day weekend.
Well, look,
to punch the clock. Well, we got to give him his credit on that.
Well, look, he's an Irishman, and it's St. Patrick's Day, so I would imagine he'd be up at midnight anyway.
Well, but not on the radio and delivering that kind of commentary. Now, I gotta tell you. He was originally booked to be on till midnight. He texted me right before the show. He said, is there any way? hate to even ask, is there any way I can get off at 45 after? So, you know, he's going to go have a good time tonight, as well he should and well deserved. But
he wouldn't be a true Irishman if he didn't.
I love that guy. I mean, what a fantastic commentator. Yeah. To be that young, if I was that smart at that age or at any age, I'd be doing good.
Well, look, there are good people all over Europe. And
we're bringing them out during March Around the World.
Exactly.
Well, let's just talk about that very quickly, if we could, Keith. So going back to 2 weeks ago, 2 weeks from tonight, if you're listening live, when we had Tom Sunich on to kick off the thing, you know, we've known Tom forever. I can't even count how many times he's been on the program. I thought that was his best interview he's ever had on the program. Not that there's ever been any bad ones or any ones that were less than great, but I thought he was just particularly on his game to kick off March Around the World. Then we went to Paul Fromm in Canada. We even had Paul Kersey, who we had as our intergalactic correspondent. We thought we were going to have him on the week before. There was a little miscommunication. But anyway, it could have been March Around the Universe if we hadn't derailed ourselves in the 60s with social justice programming and all of that. But who knows? And then, of course, last week, I don't want to put you on the spot because I didn't ask. But did you catch last week's show?
Parts of it.
Now, what is that about? What is that about? Anyway, Nick Griffin was fantastic, and we actually got this letter in from a listener in Missouri, which I'd like to read. Greetings, James and TPC crew. Thank you for having Nick Griffin on to give his analysis of the political situation in the UK, and in particular, the victory of George Galloway in Rochdale. It isn't often that we get to hear anything from men of Nick's caliber, and without TPC, we wouldn't get to hear from them at all. And then he goes on to write, I agree with Nick that what's going on in Gaza right now is genocide. If this continues, the Palestinians who aren't directly killed by bombs and bullets will die a slow, agonizing death by starvation, dehydration, and disease. The most striking thing about this genocide is that it's being conducted in full view of the world and with the full support of the U.S. government. It would be unbelievable if we weren't watching it in real time with our own eyes. Let's remember that the people of Gaza are fighting to stay on their own land because they know that if they're forced into the Sinai Desert, they'll never be allowed to return home. They don't want to go to Egypt, the USA, or anywhere else. They want to stay in Gaza and live freely in Palestine. It's their home. It's their birthright. I've just written out my check for the first quarter fundraising drive, and it'll be in the mail tomorrow. Best regards, a listener and supporter in Missouri. What a fantastic letter in response to Nick Griffin and greater issues that were raised on last week's installment of March Around the World. That's the kind of caliber of listeners we've got, ladies and gentlemen, and I'm so proud of it, and he nailed it.
And also, that's the type of the caliber of people we have in the right that are developing and sprouting out all over Europe now. For example, Germany's always had a few far-right people, but nothing like the AfD, which is, now.
Well, I wouldn't say never.
Yeah. Well, never since World War II, let's put it that way. But nonetheless, you know, people have basically decided to call BS on all of this guilt tripping that, you know, we have guilt tripping over here. It's gaslighting. That's what happened in the civil rights movement and every other left-wing movement we've had. That's what they're doing and have done to the Germans, for example. They're still paying millions of dollars or billions of dollars a year.
Yeah, millions. They would be pennies on the dollar compared to what they paid.
Yeah, but to, Israel and to out of a totally, fabricated guilt trip that, has been imposed upon them. But the younger generation, I guess it is decided to call BS on all of that, and they're not going to put up with this abuse anymore. And despite all of these, draconian measures being taken by the official governments of European nations, they're finding more and more people popping up and speaking out. And I think it's a very hopeful sign, James.
Let's get back to where we've been so far during our march around the world. We've got to take a minute and catch our breath, folks. It has been an exhilarating trip so far. Again, kicking it off 2 weeks ago with Tom Sunich in Croatia, Paul Fromm in Canada. We had Paul Kersey on to talk about where white men might have been had we not started to pursue the completely unrealistic goal of equality as opposed to the stars. Reaching the stars would have been a much more realistic goal.
Right. Well,
that was the first week.
Well, that change was imposed upon us from without, okay? And we know what that is. And, it's not something that just spontaneously happened. It was plotted and planned, For example, I was listening to Stu Peters earlier in the week about Magnus Hirschfeld, and you know, he's always been a favorite of mine to talk about, you know, how corrupt and terrible Weimar Republic Germany was. Well, he was also the first guy to kick off the civil rights movement. The last book he wrote was called Racism, and he coined that phrase, term. It was, if you mentioned, if he tried to call somebody a racist back in the 1920s, I think you're talking about some race car driver or something.
Right. It was a very new word. I mean, it's barely 100 years old. So, again, though, getting back to last week's show, particularly ambitious, four guests on four different continents, not just four different countries, four different continents, Nick Griffin in England, who just hit a grand slam. I love Nick.
Yeah, I listened to that, and it really was good.
Well, you listened to that because you picked the song, plane to London.
How did he like that?
Well, he liked it. I mean, who wouldn't like that? Well, yeah, you know, and it actually spurred a little bit of conversation. That song came out in 1967, which was the exact same year Nick told us on the show last week that his parents decided to move out of London because they saw what's coming. So it actually sparked a little bit of a...
You can run, but you can't hide, Nick.
Remy Tremblay, back-to-back weeks in Canada because of the importance, I think, of the Online Harms Act and our need to oppose it, went down to Brazil, and then Andrew Fraser in Australia. To know Drew is to love him. Drew's just a great guy.
A great Christian, too.
And but Drew, we actually had a little bit of a research department on the show last week who brought up the fact, and I did not know this, that Australian Aborigines have the lowest IQ of any group in the world.
I heard that, 67.
62 is what we found, 62. And believe me, to have the lowest IQ of any people group on the planet, there's a lot of stiff competition for that.
Yeah, really.
They've got it.
Look at what's happening in Haiti, you know, despite all of these.
We're going to talk about Haiti in the next hour.
The American intervention they've had there for years, and you know, it just seems to go from bad to worse.
All right, yeah, we're going to mention Haiti in the next hour. Actually, in the next hour, we've got to catch our breath and briefly pause our international travels to catch up on a variety of domestic news items. We're going to be talking about the State of the Union, what's going on with the Supreme Court, what's going on with Fannie Willis in Atlanta, and some other things, Haiti and Katie Britt's response to the State of the Union. All that's coming. Got to read one more thing here real quick that came in. My goodness, this segment's already almost over. Listener in South Carolina writes, James, I wanted to contribute to the first quarter fundraising drive, and the incentive couldn't be better. I literally had Steve King's book in my Amazon cart when the email came across. The shows have been fantastic as always. Keep up the good work. And that comes from a listener in South Carolina. And yes, indeed, it is true. If you contribute to the first quarter fundraising drive that we're offering, you're going to get an autographed copy of Steve King's book, Walking Through the Fire. What I like most about this book is it really goes to show what happens, how the system deals with anybody in Congress that steps out of line. And the topics covered in his book include political treason by the Republican hierarchy, media defamation, libel and slander, political assassination, why Western civilization is a superior civilization, the magnitude and impact of the illegal alien invasion. These are his words. This is how he describes his own book. President Trump and his association with Congressman King and the lying, mendacious duplicity of Kevin McCarthy, and much more. So, yes, I mentioned it last week. We forgot the first week of this month even mentioned that the first quarter fundraising drive was ongoing, and as a result, we dug ourselves in a bit of a hole we're still trying to claw out of. So please, if you're listening to me tonight and you're enjoying the programming that we provide, you're enjoying guests like Keith Woods and all the people that we've mentioned that have been on this month, and really this year has just been a fast start to the year. Right? Steve King was on with us just last month, along with Steve Stockman, Peter Brimelow. Every show's been a home run this year. But anyway, we want to keep it going. And we are essentially, we live quarter to quarter based upon God's good grace and your goodwill. So if you want to keep us on the air in our 20th year, send in your support. And we'll give you a copy of Walking Through the Fire, $100 or more. Autographed copy. He autographed all these. We ran all the ink out of that blue Sharpie, I tell you.
So add a little bit more money so we can buy a new Sharpie.
Yeah, that's right. Make it $101 if you could. But got to replace the stationery here. Anyway, so it's a pretty good incentive, and I think you'll enjoy it. So that's that. So now in the next – what do you think about Keith Woods tonight, Keith?
Well, Well,
it's confusing with two Keiths on the show at the same time.
Well, look, he never disappoints. He's been on before. Every time he just came out of nowhere about a year ago, and I mean he's risen to the head of the class.
I wouldn't say he came out of nowhere, but he certainly had a monumental year last year, and he's certainly at the tip of the spear. There's no doubt about that. So. Keith Woods in Ireland tonight. That's Croatia, Canada, England, Brazil, Australia, and Ireland that we've hit so far. Where will we go next week? Do you know?
Latvia. I don't know.
Is that your guess?
No, tell me.
We're going to Germany next week. But we're not done yet tonight. We'll tell you what's coming up still in hours 2 and 3. When we come back, although we are going to take a brief pause, as I mentioned, and catch up on some domestic news in the second hour, and then a special treat for you in the third hour. Don't miss the third hour. Do not miss the third hour.